Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, U.S. travelers will need a special visa to visit most European countries beginning January of 2021. We have an update on this developing story.
Consumer advocate Chris Elliott joins us to announce his annual customer service awards. Find out how your favorite hotel or car rental chain fared at 3:20.
The Green Book was the winner of the Oscar for Best Picture. But what is the real story of the Green Book? We share a slice of American history with you at 3:35.
Speaking of history, did you know that the first permanent Japanese settlement in the entire country was in Placerville? The Wakamatsu Festival in June recalls that time 150 years ago. You can attend, and we have details at 3:50.
Sounds like a pretty cool hour on a Sunday afternoon with the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
North to Alaska. I go north to Russia's own.
All I want one man and man.
I come from a la 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 la.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks.
With the show.
Well, it's another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys right here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Welcome, everyone. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, your hosts every week. Mark, welcome. I'm here in the studio, and you're all the way across in the Valley of the Sun. It's that time of the year, your favorite time, spring training baseball trip, huh?
It absolutely is. It is one of the great times of the year when you can come to Phoenix, thank goodness with some paying customers, and come and see baseball for 4 or 5 days in the sunshine. If you're a baseball fan, it's not quite as informal as it was 35 years ago, but it's still a pretty cool place to be. So we're having fun watching the Giants and the A's get ready for the regular season, and listening to old ball players come and share old stories with us, and we're having a pretty good time. Big brunch at the Wrigley Mansion this morning down here. My goodness, if you ever get to Phoenix and you're here on a Sunday, they have a wonderful Sunday brunch at the Wrigley Mansion. Make sure that you look it up.
Is there a lot of folks? How's the crowds this year?
There are a lot of crowds. One thing that I noticed today at my second ball game, they have taken away the vendors from the stands. And what this has done is it has created a tremendous strain on the concession stands. And the lines at the concession stands, which normally are only a problem of a sporting event, at spring training games are lasting deep into the game, and meaning people left, if they go to get something to eat, are missing a lot of the game. And I'm not sure why the vendors are suddenly gone this year, but I intend to find out before I come home.
Well, all right. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on all that's going on in the travel news, and we've got lots of breaking news, so let's get to it. Mark, what do you got for us here on today's Travel Guys Travel News?
Well, Tom, this just came out yesterday morning. Starting in 2021, U.S. citizens will need a new visa to visit Europe. If you're thinking about going overseas to most European countries, you might want to consider going this year or next, because beginning in January of 2021, it won't be as easy. On Friday, the European Union announced that travelers from the United States will need a new type of visa to visit the European Schengen area. European Travel Information and Authorization System, or ETIAS visa, which is what it will be known as. You're going to need one starting January the 1st. Before we go into incredibly huge details that people won't remember, let me tell you that a link to this story can be found at travelguysradio.com. There will probably be some further updates on it next week and some reactions from folks. It does not, apparently, have anything to do with, or at least openly, with any political situation or anything in the United States. It is simply an effort by some of the European countries. This includes all of the EU member states except three or four. So just about everything in Europe. And let me see if I can find, according to the European Union, Europe has recently decided to improve their security level to avoid any further problems with illegal migration and terrorism. This process allows European immigration and customs authorities to pre-screen all travelers and confirm their status before permitting them entry or even to board a flight, thus improving security members throughout the entire region. So again, at travelguysradio.com, there is a link. It's important to know that this new rule does not take effect until January of 2021. So if you're planning a European vacation this year or any time in 2020, this is not going to apply to you. But if you do plan to travel in Europe beyond that, there are a list of all of the regulations that will go with and what we require to get this visa can be found at travelguysradio.com.
Very good.
Yeah, it's kind of a shocker. TSA is preparing for a record number of spring break travelers. And Tom, here's something that might be near and dear to your heart. Walt Disney. Disney has announced opening dates for their latest Star Wars attraction, Galaxy's Edge. Are you a Star Wars man?
Oh, yes, yes. We our family's been watching very closely. And when we were there just a few weeks ago, we did everything we could to see if we could take a peek over the fence and get a glimpse or find out about an opening date, but couldn't. But you've got some news for us.
Yes, sir. The Galaxy's Edge is opening ahead of schedule on the 31st of May at the Disneyland Resort in California. It will not open until August 29th at Disney's Universal Studios in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So be open in California 3 months before it's open in Florida, and it's opening in California a little bit earlier than expected. So that's a pretty cool thing.
No, boy. I can hardly wait.
Yeah. You and all the other older big kids, I guess we will call.
There you go. Just to wait in, but they'll have cool things to see while you're waiting. I'm sure.
An aircraft fire caused runways to temporarily close at Newark's Liberty Airport on Saturday for about 30 minutes as the airport dealt with fire in the cargo hold of an airplane. It was a cargo plane, not a passenger plane, that was involved. It did back up the Newark airport for the entire day. As you can imagine, it's an airport where closing a couple of runways for 30 minutes indeed is going to cause all kind of cascading effects throughout the region. Snow all over the East Coast, lots of travel waivers if you have travel plans in the next day or three. You might want to check with your airline online first. Remember, if they're offering a travel waiver, in many cases that allows you to be able to rebook your flight at no charge a few days later. And sometimes there are even better options available to you. But definitely if you're traveling east in the next few days, you want to check with your airline before heading to the airport. You might save yourself a whole lot of trouble. That whole European visa thing, Tom, is going to rock the travel world. I'm telling you, suddenly now, to places that you just needed a passport, now you're going to have to apply for a special new visa, and there are, they're going to ask a lot of questions. You've got forms to fill out and all those kinds of things, so it's not going to be as easy to travel to Europe starting in January of 2021 as it has traditionally been.
Well, okay, there's your travel news, and coming up, consumer advocate Chris Elliott joins us here on the Travel Guys. He has his annual Customer Service Awards. We're going to find out how your favorite hotel, car rental, airlines fared. That's next here on the Travel Guys. With you, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, here every Sunday 3 to 4. And again, as always, follow along at travelguysradio.com. We have links to our guests there, including our special guest who, here as always, helps us out to make you a smarter traveler. And that would be Chris Elliott with Elliott Advocacy. You can find him at elliott.org. Chris has been doing this for quite some time, helping people out on a regular basis out of some tight spots. And for whatever the reason, it oftentimes seems to, a lot of times, has to do with travel. Mark, Chris, what are we going to talk about this afternoon?
Well, and you know, Tom, we used to be able to tell people on Sundays, we'd be able to talk to them about Chris's column in the Bee and what he had said that day or something like that. But since our local newspaper has virtually eliminated any vestiges of a travel section or even a travel page, there's no place to put the Consumer Travel Advocate's column on, nor is there any place to put advertisements for local travel companies. So kind of trying to work on that. But for now, the only place you can find Chris in Sacramento is on the Travel Guys. Chris, last week, you announced the winners of the Customer Service Awards for your organization for 2019. And I sent you our Consumer Advocate. And you are frequently exposed to the underbelly of certain companies. I think that customer service awards that carry the Elliott stamp of approval on them are probably worth a little bit more than the typical customer service award. So talk a little bit about this is your 14th year. How did you get this started? How do people win? And then let's talk a little bit about the winners.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. That's awfully nice of you. I can't believe it's been 14 years. And yeah, when I started this 14 years ago, all of the awards were these industry awards that where there were, you know, some handpicked judges and the criteria were maybe not the most consumer friendly. And you never quite knew how they were arriving at the winners. And so I wanted to create something that was a true Reader's Choice Awards. And that's what we did. Every year we poll our readers and ask them which companies give them the best customer service. And I'm really excited about these winners because I think that they really are the best of the best.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the categories here, particularly as they relate closely to travel. Theme parks, that's kind of fun.
And Disney won, of course, because they're Disney. the interesting thing is that the number one theme park was Epcot over at Disney in Orlando, and then it followed by two more Disney theme parks, the Magic Kingdom in Orlando and Disneyland in California. And that was kind of interesting. You know, Disney's always been very dominant and high with customer satisfaction, but Epcot is the theme park for adults, and I mean that in the most G-rated sense possible, of course, but it's got something for the whole family is what I'm trying to say, and I think that's why it did well.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about vacation rentals here. Airbnb is on the top, VRBO is second. Is that mostly a result of just market share or volume, or do you think that Airbnb really truly is the best or the most popular?
Well, Airbnb got the most votes, but strictly between us, if you look at the list, it's VRBO and HomeAway, and they're both the same company. And if you put those two together, they actually get more votes than Airbnb does. And so it's a little bit of an upset. We didn't really say that HomeAway was the winner, but Airbnb does very well because it does one thing very well. You know, you're looking for a place to stay, and it makes the booking process extremely simple. You know, you don't have to go through 5 or 6 or 7 booking screens. It tries to keep things very intuitive and user-friendly, and I think people like that a lot.
Chris, you rated online travel agencies. Your readers rated online travel agencies, I should say. TripAdvisor, Expedia, yeah. Booking.com, Kayak, and Priceline. Is the order that they came out in. We like to tell folks here, use whatever third-party booking service you want to use to find the best price, and then try to go book it directly with the vendor you're buying it from, if at all possible. What makes TripAdvisor number one in your opinion?
That was a bit of a surprise, but TripAdvisor has won for the second year in a row now, and I think the reason is that it combines the crowdsourcing, so all the user reviews, with a traditional online agency. And so that's why you find people are gravitating toward that. It's the familiarity. It's seeing reviews that are perceived to be trustable. We could spend probably an hour talking about whether or not TripAdvisor is a site you should trust, but people do trust it, and so that's why it got such high ratings from us.
Chris, travel insurance is next. Who came out on top?
That was Allianz, and again, they came out on top last year or two. Allianz just does one thing and one thing very well. It sells travel insurance with at a reasonable price and with lots of good coverage. And it's also very big, so it has very good name recognition. And I think that that's why it did well.
And with that being said, Chris, what's your take on travel insurance? How important is it? And, you know, is it something that you advise people take advantage of?
I would say if you're traveling somewhere, always think about travel insurance because you just never know what's going to happen. And this, that's especially true if it's a bucket list vacation like a safari or around the world cruise. You don't want to lose all that when you maybe run into a medical problem. The thing to know about travel insurance is there's two basic kinds. There's named perils, which is exactly what it sounds like. If it's named in the policy, they cover it. And cancel for any reason, which is slightly more expensive, but you can cancel for any reason, and they'll pay you anywhere from 50 to 70% of the cost of the trip.
Chris, when it comes to travel, probably the category that is most important, well, maybe accommodations, but certainly airlines. Which airline you pick and how miserable you are or are not getting there and getting back. So what did Elliott.org readers have to say about airlines?
Southwest Airlines, once again, I think they've won 5 years in a row now at least, and people just love Southwest.
I notice here also, Chris, it goes Southwest, Delta, JetBlue, American, and Alaska. And certainly conspicuous by their absence there is United Airlines. Do you think that this is a continuing problem for them? Is it just the repercussions from dragging a man off an airplane a couple of years ago, or are there really still some problems at that airline?
Yeah, United still has some work to do. Although the early numbers I'm getting for 2019 suggest that their complaints are way, way down, so they must be doing something. Now let's hope it sticks. I don't think people like United because of the high fees and a customer service culture that is just not resonating with people who read my site. But, you know, interestingly enough, we talk about the winners. I would have expected Alaska Airlines to do much better, and it only got fifth place. And then Southwest Airlines, when I look at all these winners, I think to myself, you know, air travel has changed so much. And right now, the airline that can make air travel the least miserable for you, it's not even a question of will you be miserable. You will be miserable. The seats are small. The service is not so great. But if the airline that kind of sucks the least is the one that wins. And so that's how I see our airline list.
In order to be the best airline in the country, you just have to be the one that is the least awful. Consumer advocate Chris Elliott is joining us on the Travel Guys today. We are talking about Elliott.org Readers 2019 Customer Service Awards. A couple more categories to get to here quickly. Chris, car rental. Enterprise is on top, which is interesting because until recently, they seem to be the company that people like to pick on.
That was a huge upset, and the biggest, probably the only upset in the travel category, other than the Airbnb one, is that Enterprise won and fair and square. I was surprised because Enterprise has had quite a few run-ins with us as consumer advocates. They've, you know, we've talked a lot about the ding and dent scam that they're alleged to have run, and I still have a couple of cases where there's been some damage to cars that consumers are being charged for. But I think that they are trying to really reform their ways. We've received far fewer complaints in the last year, year and a half than we have previously. And the ones that we bring to Enterprise are taken care of usually fairly quickly. And so I think that meant a lot. Also, people just reading about Enterprise and seeing that they're trying to do the right thing, I think that meant something.
Well, and if they would just ditch trying to nickel and dime people, I think what the fact that they're on top indicates that the nickel and diming isn't hurting them as much. But Enterprise generally presents themselves, in my opinion, as a fairly professional company. They offer to pick you up and they provide some services that other rental car companies don't. So it's obvious that from them being listed number one here, I was a little surprised too. But what that tells me is that those extra services that they provide are very important to their loyal customers, and their loyal customers will follow them anywhere. So if they can just take care of the underbelly there, they'll probably be okay. Cruise Lines, Royal Caribbean came out on top. Any comments there?
Yeah, Royal Caribbean also number one last year. People just love them. You know, cruise lines have this almost cult-like following among their customers. So, if you're a Royal Caribbean guy, you're always going to be a Royal Caribbean guy. But honestly, though, they have great ships, good service, not too many fees. That all added up to a number one ranking for us.
Before I let you go, Chris, and we should tell folks that Viking, Disney, Carnival, and Celebrity rounded out the top five. Also, we'll have all of these. If you want to go to TravelGuysRadio.com, we'll have a link so you can look at all of these individually if you would like. And also, you'll find some other interesting things there at Elliott.org. Chris, last category here was hotels. The mega hotel of Marriott is on top here now. But just interestingly, if it wasn't Marriott alone, if it was Marriott and Sheraton, would it still be Marriott on top, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Despite all the things that have happened in the last year, people love Marriott. They're very loyal to them. We'll have to see what happens with their new loyalty program. But I think, though, that it's, a hotel room is kind of commoditized. And what I mean by commoditized is that one hotel room looks just like the other. And so it's a bed and a bathroom and a shower. And what Marriott does is it likes to stand out by just with its customer service. So it has excellent customer service training, takes care of its people, and then their people take care of their customers. And that really is reflected in its number one ranking with us, I think.
The 2019 Customer Service Awards from Elliott.org. Again, a link to the entire list is at TravelGuysRadio.com. Chris, thanks for joining us, buddy. Take care. Be safe on the road.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks again, Chris. Now, coming up after the news break.
Tom, remember a few years ago we had a lady on the show who did an interview with us about the Green Book? About the thing that African-American folks, people of color, use to travel in the South?
Absolutely.
And, of course, now that title, at least, has been made famous by an Oscar-winning movie that some people say, doesn't really talk too much about the Green Book itself. Well, for those folks who saw the Academy Awards, maybe have seen the movie or thinking about going to see the movie, we have the story of the real Green Book coming up here next on The Travel Guys, right after the news here on KFBK.
It's the back half of another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here every Sunday 3 to 4 on KFBK. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And before the break, we mentioned the Green Book. If you've been following the Academy Awards or the movies this past year, the Green Book won the Academy Award for Best Picture. But, a lot of people don't really know exactly what the Green Book is. In fact, it truly is a book. We had an opportunity a few years back to interview a gal who explained to us exactly what the purpose of the Green Book was, how it related to African Americans back in the day when they were traveling Route 66. We're going to share that information with you, Mark.
Candace C. Taylor, she is part of a thing called the Green Book Project. And Candace C., welcome to the Travel Guys.
Thank you.
And explain to our listeners, if you would, in brief, what the Green Book Project is and how it relates to Route 66.
Okay, well, the Green Book was a historic travel guide that was published for black people during Jim Crow. So it started publication in 1936 to 1966, and it was published by a man named Victor H. Green. So that's, it was an incredible, resourceful, innovative solution to the horrific problem of racial segregation that was happening in America at the time. And I'm working on a project that it's a multidisciplinary project that will eventually become an exhibit and a virtual reality platform and a map. So I stumbled onto the project kind of by accident. I was writing a travel guide for Route 66 for the Moon series, Avalon Travel series. And I, being a Black woman and being a travel writer and a cultural documentarian for almost 20 years, I just wondered, you know, the same narrative that we see in regards to Route 66, which is the, you know, middle-class white suburban family who jumps in their Airstream trailer and all the nostalgia that's associated with that. I felt like, you know, there had to be more to the story. So when I looked a little deeper, and I did find this Negro Motorist Screen Book that, by the way, was a national guide, but it was widely used on Route 66 because Route 66 is just a popular tourist and travel destination.
Now, Candace, this book was put out, in essence, to help Black travelers stay out of trouble. I mean, not only to find the places that were friendly to them, but to also help them avoid the places that were unfriendly to them, yes?
Well, it was really more of a guide that showed you where you could go.
Okay.
It didn't clearly outline where you shouldn't or couldn't go, but it was assumed, especially if you were Black at that time, that most places were not going to be welcoming to you. You know, the reality of the situation, especially, you know, once you left the Jim Crow South, we assumed that the West and the North was somehow more liberated.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, you know, it wasn't. Jim Crow had no borders. So as you moved westward or north, you ran into a lot of the same problems. And sometimes it was even worse because there were no signs. Discrimination was still in full force. So the signs actually helped give you information that you really needed. Another issue on Route 66, you know, that was not just particular to Route 66, but another major issue is that there were sundown towns throughout the country. I don't know if your readers know what sundown, if your listeners know what sundown towns are, but they were all white communities that were all white on purpose. And James Lowen has done some incredible research, and he wrote a book called Sundown Towns, if you want to learn more about them. And they were essentially, like, you could not be in the town and be Black after 6 p.m. And if you were found in the town after 6 p.m., there were serious consequences. Lynchings, you know, harassment, death. I mean, it was really, it was not just that it was dangerous. It was life-threatening. And, you know, some sundown towns would have signs right at the county line, you know, saying, "Nigger, don't let the sun go down on you here." There were other towns that would just ring a bell at 6 p.m. and you would know if you're Black that you had to leave. Again, if you were traveling, you know, this, as you know, when you're on a road trip, you're just exploring something for the first time. Everything is new. You don't know that community. You don't know the area. So it was really critical, you know, that Route 66 in particular, out of the 89 counties that lined Route 66, 44 of them were sundown towns.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. We're talking with Candace Taylor. Candace is a part of a thing called the Green Book Project. We're talking about Route 66 and how difficult or how much fun it was or how many kicks you got on Route 66 as opposed to how many times you got kicked on Route 66 might have had something to do with the color of your skin. It seems kind of ironic, Candace, as you pointed out here, that the man who sung the very popular song about getting your kicks on the old highway was an African-American man who wouldn't have been welcome in many of the places that he was talking about getting his kicks on.
Yeah, absolutely. Nat King Cole, ironically, was shut out of many places on Route 66. And, you know, it was indicative. It was the reality that we were all dealing with in America. But, yeah, it is kind of a bitter irony, isn't it?
You know, you mentioned a little while ago about the project that you're working on is going to be somewhat of a multimedia exhibit. Now, is it going to be a something that is going to be in one locale, or is it going to travel? Tell us more about that.
Well, we're basically in the early stages of putting it together. I've had several meetings with sites, the Smithsonian. So we're talking about developing it, that it would tour for 3 to 5 years, starting sometime hopefully in about 2018, 2019. So for the next year, I just received a grant from the Schomburg. It's a New York Public Library that's based in New York mm-hmm. City. And they have the largest collection of green books in the country. They've digitized actually 22 editions. So if your listeners want to actually see what the green book looked like, it was a pretty amazing document. I mean, it had, you know, there were articles about different cities. It told you, you know, places to go and things to see. You know, it wasn't just like a AAA. Some people say it was AAA for Black people, but, you know, there were all kinds of, like, department stores, doctor services, taverns. There were all kinds of things that were listed in the Green Book. So I'm excited to, you know, to have that, to get this fellowship to go to New York and really look at their archive.
Well, and Candace, it impresses me at this point that the National Park Service, as I'm sure you're aware, is talking very heavily about making Route 66 a national monument, a national park. I'm not sure exactly how that will work because there is no national park that stretches quite the way Route 66 does across a good part of the country. This is absolutely a part of this story that has to be told. You know, Route 66 impresses me. It's a fun place. Get your kicks on Route 66. You're traveling. You're seeing places you haven't seen before. You get to the western side of the country. There's all these amazing shapes of the landscape and national parks and the Grand Canyon. And this is a story that really hasn't been told. And I've traveled up and down the road for a quarter century, and I've been in all the museums, and I've been in places where people have their memorabilia and stuff like that. And it now strikes me profoundly that it's an all-white history. It's an all-white story that's been told, and it wasn't an all-white story. And so it's incredibly important, I think, to the history of the highway and for folks to be able to see the whole picture of what you're doing. I just am amazed by it, and I have a great deal of respect for you, and I really wish you well in your journey of discovery, because I think that this is really a wonderful story.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that, you know, that you even came to that realization, because I think, you know, there's a reason why Black people aren't nostalgic about Route 66, the nation's favorite highway. We just have a different relationship to it. But I think that's not to say that the Green Book was, like I said, this resourceful, innovative guide. It was the solution to that problem. So, you know, Green Book was written in the spirit of, like, you too can experience America.
Mr. Green was a Harlem postal worker. Do you know the backstory there at all, quickly? Why did he decide to write this book?
Well, he was tired of getting, you know, cold shoulders and not feeling welcome in certain areas, even in Harlem or even in his native, you know, in New York City.
Right.
So the Green Book started. The first edition, 1936, was just, you know, Westchester County and New York City. So it has the largest cluster of Green Book sites. There's about 350 just in Harlem, the Bronx, and Brooklyn. So it was, you know, something that he was really developing for his own community, and it just grew. But because he was a postal worker, he knew other postal workers throughout the country. And then they, you know, he would have them take Green Books on their route, and they would sell advertising to
them. Ah, there you go. Because postal workers got around. There you go. Yeah, that makes sense. Candace, I really thank you for your time today. We are on TravelGuysRadio.com. You will find a link so that you can go and find out some more about this amazing story, this amazing project. If you are a fan of old highways, I'm sure that you will find it to be of great interest. Tom, I think that's really one of the more fascinating interviews that we have ever done.
I agree, and it's so timely. I mean, I know when we did the interview about the Green Book, the very last thing that even entered our mind was that there may be a film in the future either about the Green Book or related to it. So it's comes full circle.
Well, it has, and it's an important story. And some people feel, I haven't seen the movie yet, I intend to, some people feel the movie didn't really, that they took the title The Green Book, but that they really didn't talk about The Green Book and what it was truly all about, what that story of The Green Book was, that they went kind of in a different direction. But Candace explains it, I think, perfectly. She's going to have a book out at the end of the year about the Green Book on Route 66. So we're going to have her back on the program when she gets close to publication and talk to her and find out a little more about what I think is a, you know, maybe not the best moment in American history, but it's still a part. And I think it's an important story to be told. Okay, one more guest to go here on the Travel Guys this afternoon. The Wakamatsu Festival, the first Japanese settlement in the United States, was in Placerville, California. It was 150 years ago this June. Boy, have they got a celebration coming up. We're going to tell you all about it next here on the Travel Guys.
Country roads, take me home.
As always, here to make you a smarter traveler, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are your hosts, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and links and other information in regards to travel and much more available at TravelGuysRadio.com.
You know, Tom, last summer we talked a little bit about a festival that was coming up here, a local festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know, this is not until next June, but we just kind of wanted to let you folks know that it was coming. And now next June is only, well, heck, just down the road. I mean, at some point in time, it'll stop raining and the weather will warm up and the water will stop flowing, and it'll be summertime in Sacramento, and we'll be outdoors doing things. With us on the phone line is Melissa Lobach, and Melissa is with the American River Conservancy, and she is part of the team that is putting together the Wakamatsu Fest 150. Melissa, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Thank you very much for having me again.
You're welcome. Tell us a little bit about the festival, and for folks who might not have been around the first time that we had you as a guest, explain what it is and when it'll be held. It's second week of June, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, second weekend of June. It would be on June the 6th through 8th, Thursday through Sunday. This year, we're going to be celebrating the 150th anniversary of the first Japanese colony in America at their historic location in Placerville, California. Wakamatsu Farm is the site of the first Japanese colony in America, established June 8, 1869. So this year it is our honor and our privilege to share with the world this fine sesquicentennial celebration.
So Melissa, who will come to this event? I mean, obviously, people of Japanese ancestry who are local here will probably consider it to be a great historic marker for them. But in terms of general population, what's going to happen at the festival that will appeal to all of us general public type folks?
Everyone is welcome. And in fact, we're expecting visitors all the way from Japan.
Let me ask you, is there special events that you'll be having, you know, opportunities to hear people, lectures and talks and cultural activities? What do we have?
Exactly. We'll have three stages running simultaneously throughout the festival. Our main stage will feature each day the world premiere of the Wakamatsu colony story. That will happen each day for festival goers, as well as taiko drumming and other Japanese traditional cultural art, performing art forms on our main stage. And our medium-sized stage behind the beautiful Grainer Farmhouse will have lectures and discussions, demonstrations, and small performances there. And then also under the beautiful canopy of our blue oak tree near Okisan's grave, we'll have smaller, quieter, more reverent, peaceful events happening throughout the performance or throughout the festival.
Now, it's not just the weekend, right? It's kind of a long weekend type festival. It runs 3-4 days, something like that?
Yes, it runs Thursday through Sunday, and each of those days we'll have something going on each one of those stage areas, as well as up to 50 booths, especially on the weekend. So lots of different Japanese information and vendors. We're also expecting some wonderful purveyors of food, so some Japanese and certainly other traditional or more common festival foods during our celebration.
Wow. Sounds like a pretty big deal. Placerville, of all places, the first Japanese settlement in the United States?
Yeah.
Melissa, do you know, how did that come to happen in Placerville?
Well, it's a bit of a story, and we'll tell the world all about it when they join the festival. But the short version is that at the end of the Boshin War, a colony was given permission, common terms, they were more like refugees. They traveled over to America to start a new life in a faraway land at a time when there weren't really any other Japanese people in America at all. And so, they sort of stealthily stole away and brought with them thousands of agricultural products to begin a new life in America. It's a fascinating story.
The Wakamatsu Fest 150, it will be in Placerville the second week of June. If you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, we have a link to the festival website there, and we'll look forward to seeing you up at the Wakamatsu Festival in early June. Melissa, thank you again, and maybe a couple weeks before the festival, come back and tell us the one really exciting thing that's going to happen.
I would love to do that. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, okay, there you go. Don't forget now, visit TravelGuysRadio.com. Links to all of our guests and lots of other great information can be found there on a daily basis. And if you're interested in the podcasts of the Travel Guys, you can sign up to be notified when they're posted on a weekly basis and be able to listen to some of the programs that perhaps you've missed or some of your favorites right there at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark?
You know, Tom, we talk about the importance of booking your travel directly with the people who are providing it whenever you can.
Mm-hmm.
We tell folks, use those third-party websites to find the very best price, and then go back to the vendor that's selling you, whether it's an airline or a hotel or a tour company, whatever it is, and say, you know, this is the price that I found, and this is the price that I want. Most of the time, I think you'll find that they will honor it without too much discussion. However, when you're buying airline tickets, we remind folks that you have 24 hours if you buy the ticket from the airline to cancel a ticket without any penalty. So if you buy a ticket from United Airlines today and you wake up tomorrow morning and you look at the confirmation, you say, oh, my God, I got the wrong date, or I got the wrong airport.
It happens.
Or now there's a problem in this trip. I find that after looking at some other things, I can't go on this date. You can cancel that ticket, and there is no charge if you booked it directly with the airline and you cancel it with the airline. In Chris Elliott's website at Elliott.org this week, someone wrote in and mentioned the fact that they had booked a ticket online. They had booked it through a third party called Flight Hub. And when they called the next day to cancel it, the third party booking company said, that's no problem, we'll cancel that for you. And then the person said, but then these $17.50, there were two tickets, charges appeared on her credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went back and read the fine print, she found that that Flight Hub charges $17.50 once you buy a ticket, doesn't matter when you cancel it, in addition to whatever the airlines might charge. So in this case, the lady thought that she was well within that cancellation, that 24-hour grace period, and indeed she was, but because she had involved a third party, and the third party had different rules, and she wasn't paying attention to those, she was still charged. So I would just say to our listeners, this is another reason that you check out the prices, and then you go directly to the vendor if you possibly can, because had this lady done this, she would have booked the ticket directly with the airline, and then when she had to cancel it 24 hours later, she wouldn't have had to incur any charges. So indeed, the Elliott folks tried to get the charges reversed for her, but they were legit, and the company was entitled to charge them. And indeed, she had clicked off that she had read the information, which, of course, we know these days that nobody reads that stuff, but you're going to be held to it anyway, so you might want to at least, you know, print it out so that if you have to cancel, you can take a look at it. All right, shifting from being a smarter traveler to a quick reminder here, our friend Chris Hart, who runs the Sacramento River Train and the Sierra Railroad, Railroad. They are doing some special events, and I wanted to just mention them here. Chris has a St. Patrick's Day train where they have beer and wine and live music. They're doing Easter trains. So if you go to travelguysradio.com, we will have a link to the Sacramento River train, and perhaps you will find something interesting that you will like to do with them in the month ahead here, as we have Easter and also St. Patrick's Day just around the corner.
Hey, a train ride with a bunch of folks celebrating St. Patrick's Day is guaranteed to be big fun. Well, next week on the Travel Guys, we're going to have Chris Elliott back. And if you've ever been interested in vacation rentals, maybe you've taken advantage of vacation rentals, got some tips, could save you some bucks next week on the Travel Guys.
Gwen Duncan's going to stop by and tell us about some cities when you're traveling where you can get free tours if you have a long layover. All that next Sunday, 3 o'clock right here on the Travel Guys. Remember, dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. We'll see you next time.